Blog Talk Radio.
Life, love, and wellness.
Right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And let me give a shout out. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah. I just appreciate you for hanging out with me this evening. I'm Sandy Rogers, and it's my pleasure to present to you these incredible guests that I have each week that come so full of knowledge and expertise in their chosen field. So we're going to be bringing on our guests shortly, but you know, we always take care of a few housekeeping rules around here. And so the very first thing that we do, not only here on the show, but every day, is we give thanks. We give thanks to our ancestors. We thank them for being with us always, but especially on Tuesdays as we discuss issues that are not ordinarily talked about in open settings. So, you know, you may hear people whispering about it over in the corner or something like that, but the ancestors have given us strength to be able to address these issues straight up and out loud here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. So we stand on the shoulders for strength and courage and enlightenment of our ancestors. So ancestors, we love you always, always, always. Ashe, ashe, ashe. And so next, what we do is we normally anchor ourselves in affirmative reading from one of my posts. But what I would like to do today is just to kind of bypass that, because our guest tonight, I mean, she's going to use all 90 minutes plus some. So I want to just make sure that I open up the floor to her momentarily. But I tell you, you know, like, we really don't know who we have in our presence until someone kind of taps us on the shoulder and say, hey, you know, I know so-and-so. You want to see if you can have them as one of your guests for me, you know, like on a radio show. So I'm so jazzed about my guest tonight. Oh, wait, Kiana Brown. And I am going to tell you about her just in a moment. But let's do this other stuff first. Let's keep laying the groundwork, and then we'll get right back and bring on our special guest tonight. So you know that our shows are all archived, or people can always go back and listen to the rebroadcast of the shows. And so your comments are always welcome. And if you don't have the number, if you're listening by another device, our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And you press 1 on the dial to let me know you want to speak live on air with us, and then I'll open up your phone. However, once I open up your phone, because I normally don't disconnect you or, you know, mute you out, please just put your phone on mute if you're not speaking, so that there's no disruption in the quality of sound. The mics on this is just very, very sensitive, and it hears all the little paper rumbling and all of like that. So we appreciate it. It's all about life. It's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is called What Does It Mean to Forgive? And you guys just wait until I read our guest speaker's bio. It's going to blow you away. She's got so much lived experiences, and I know the sister's not that old, so she's lived a rich life, and I'm going to hip you to that in just a minute. But I did want to make sure that we touched all the bases. And again, happy holidays to everybody. Be safe out there. The sun came out for us today in Atlanta. It was really, really nice because it looks really gray earlier with a lot of fog and stuff. So I would pray that you have the best of holidays with family and friends or however you choose to celebrate it. And so let me get this other link here. If you want to listen to any of the rebroadcasts or any of the old shows, you can always go online at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers. SandyRogers. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And we're going to take a quick music break. And then when we get back, man, I'm going to introduce you guys to the most fabulous sister that I've met in a long time. So here we go. We'll be right back. Very shortly. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Welcome back. So let me give you the number one more time. You're welcome to call in and talk live on air with us at 516-531-9819. And if you press 1, it'll let us know you want to speak live on air with us. So it is my utmost pleasure to introduce to you our speaker for tonight, Kiana F. Brown. So I'm going to read a few things about her, and you'll understand that connection that I made with that song, I'm Every Woman. So Uplift Women Alliance, she is the founder and visionary, and she's the forgiveness expert and a God-graced woman with a story, one that runs layers deep, including a 4-year sentence in a maximum security prison, one that is loaded with revelation, triumph, and nuggets of wisdom, one that is grounded in forgiveness and service. Kiana utilizes her forgiveness strategies on multiple platforms. For UWA, which is Uplift Women Alliance, she is poised to serve, support, and equip women who are wearing layers of hurt, pain, and unforgiveness. Issues, when left unaddressed, builds up enough power to keep them stuck, functioning in dysfunction and bitter. Through UWA, she serves as the lead navigator for those ready to walk the path to forgiveness, discover their purpose, and establish authentic confidence so they can live as pure, bold, B-O-L-D. Her vision for each member of UWA is a personalized navigation to their destiny through 3 steps. Get out their trap, T-R-A-P, which means toxic mindset, rejection, being afraid, and in pain. Step in their P-O-D, point of disruption, designed for self-discovery and repossession of purpose. Live as pure bold, B-O-L-D, believer, overcomer, leader, destiny grabber. When you are able to forgive, there is freedom and confidence that emerges, which makes serving voluntarily or with your business seem effortless. Man, she's a media guru, a successful business owner. She's an established author. She's written with such people as Les Brown and some other authors. She's a correspondent with a few magazines. She's been in the company of Tamala Mann and Joyce Myers with her being a field correspondent for a magazine. And the list just goes on and on. And it's Christmas Eve, right? And above all else, Kiana enjoys serving her great husband, Charles, nurturing and developing their son, Jeremiah, and taking ultimate care of their 3 fur babies, Kendall, Coco, and Bella. Connect with her and follow her on Facebook and on Instagram at The Forgiveness Expert. And then you can also learn more about UWA at www.kiana, that's spelled K-Y-O-N-N-A, fbrown.com/Uplift Women Alliance. Look, she serves the community through speaking at events and conferences. She hosts webinars and the multimedia platform Forgiveness Friday Show, along with an online community group called Forgiveness Nation. That's on Facebook. And she wants to help everyone, everybody, become a forgiveness expert. That's what's needed in this world, right? And what makes her and her mission of forgiveness so impactful is her past. So she, like I told you in the beginning, she has an experience of multiple of life issues that allows her to connect with people from all walks of life. And her genuine love to help others came from a place of her past hurts. And what better teacher than someone that has walked that path? So, Kiana, I thank you so much on Christmas Eve and everything for taking time from your extremely active schedule to be live here with us tonight. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say what it is an honor to actually be on your show this evening. It's an honor every time that God gives me the opportunity to share the healing and the transformation that he's allowed to transpire through my life. And secondly, I was listening. I was like, oh, who is she talking about? You make it. It's like, oh, that, yeah, I do that. But it's truly, truly a blessing, and all through the grace of God, nothing that I have materialized on my own. I've learned and developed a faith in the Lord, which allows for me to be prosperous in his things. Because when I was in the world and doing the opposite, those things were not transpiring for me. But before we get started, before I go into anything, I know this is your show, but I want to share a prayer with your community before we get talking so that they can understand a little bit more about what I had to do in order to get to where I am today. Is that okay?
Sure, that's perfect. Yes, ma'am.
All right, it's called the Set Aside Prayer. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, my spiritual path, and even you, Lord. I pray for an open mind and a new experience of myself, understanding my brokenness, my spiritual path, and especially you. I like to put that at the forefront of pretty much everything that I do because there are conceptions that we have about life and about ourselves that are so not the truth. They're a facade of what we come to believe based upon our environment. The true statement that we are a product of our environments, I believe and hold that dearly to my heart. But the one thing that I know about being in an environment is that when you enter that, if you have confidence, you have a strong belief, and you have faith, you can be a culture shifter in that environment. And that's ultimately what forgiveness has done for me. It has allowed for me to take the attire of the enemy off.
Culture shifter. I like that. And it is important to establish that foundation at the beginning. I love your prayer. And so you start all of your events or speaking engagements in that order?
Well, here recently, over the past couple of months, since I've come across this prayer, because it's not totally my own prayer, but I've kind of tweaked it a little bit to fit me, because you know there were many times that I was in my own way of believing that this is the way one thing was, and it wasn't until I read this prayer and I realized, you know, hey, Kiana, that's what you did. You set aside all the things that you thought you knew about yourself, about your spiritual path, and even about Christ, because as a child, I grew up in a household where my grandmother took us to church. We prayed every single morning. It was a faith-filled home, and I had the religion based upon what I was taught, but not the relationship, and so that's where it separates. So I had to separate the religion of what I knew so that I could gain the spiritual relationship with my Father, and that opened up a whole another portal for me.
Getting into
that space, and it's like, you know, I got to, you know, set aside everything that I thought I knew, because clearly where I was not where I wanted to be. And so the things that I was operating in is what allowed for me to get there. So I had to push all of that to the side.
Yeah.
So I like to open with this because I feel that not only just for myself, because when I start to share, you know, when people hear everything that you shared about me, it sounds amazing. But now you're going to have to set all that to the side so you can see how I got there.
There you go. And it's important, you know, for me, it's important to be able to understand, you know, that we can have all those accolades. But, you know, if you didn't go through something to get there, then something's not right with the picture. It ain't balanced, you know, because you just don't get to all of this, what you have to share with the world through sitting at home, you know, saying Hail Marys all day. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to live mm-hmm. life in order to have a testimony to tell somebody what we, you know, what's on the other side of all of that stuff. So,
I relate for the those out there who are listening who read the Bible. I relate my life to Paul. He was one who was so radical and the opposite for the things that he believed in. And then it wasn't until he had that eye-opening experience on Damascus Road, and then when he met Ananias, and Ananias opened up his eyes. And that's the life that I lived. I lived so in my own world, in my own way, and it wasn't until I was in a position where I had to surrender totally everything to Christ that my eyes become open to the presence of him and where he wanted me to go in life.
You want to tell us about that road? You want to tell us about your journey?
Yeah, this is your show. I can go. Now, I can really go. So, I try to be respectful of the show.
Just like you just said, right? Just like you just said with the prayer, you know, the set-aside prayer. I don't pre-orchestrate any of this. I don't have no questions, you know, no preset questions or nothing. I just let the energy flow. And so, whatever you feel comfortable with sharing. Okay.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for actually sharing this Christmas Eve with us today on this show.
Yes.
Just when I get into this moment of sharing, it really takes me back to the experiences that I've had in life. I grew up in Washington, D.C. area, and I grew up in a household, as I shared earlier, with my grandparents. And that was a direct derivative of my mother and my father living the 80s lifestyle, should I say. They had other things that were taking control over their mindset, the different drugs and the environments that they were a part of. And they did something that was really hard for some parents to do, and they gave custody to my grandparents of me and my brother and I. And it was such a sound environment. We went to church, as I said. We had all of our meals. I mean, we were even looked at in the community or in our neighborhood as one of the families who had. Right. We lived in the Northeast Area Quadrant, which is not the best of neighborhoods, but not the worst. And we had a lot. You know, there wasn't a Christmas that we didn't have anything. There wasn't a school year where we didn't go to school with a full set of clothes. We were well taken care of. And that was in the space of being taken care of financially, being taken care of physically. But my grandparents raising me, they did exactly what parents did in that day. Now, I'm not putting anything against, you know, and it could not all be parents or grandparents in that era. But in my household, their primary concern was that roof, the electric, the water, you know, all of those things, and letting you know who the Lord was. But for me, I realized that I was missing that emotional connection. That emotional connection wasn't there in the household as I go back from the memory that I have as a child, that connection that I try to have with Jeremiah when I'm concerned about how he's feeling, where I'm concerned about how his day was at school, you know, and not to say that my grandparents didn't, you know, care, but it was, you went to school today, do you have any homework, let's do your homework, you know, and that was the brunt of it, you know, not trying to engage in any extracurricular activities outside of whether it was Sunday school or anything like that. So I'm just trying to give a foundation for the household that I grew up in. Really, really structured. But I missed that connection. And I missed the connection with my parents. And my mom, at the point of my life, probably, I want to say I was maybe 12 years old, at that particular point, my mom had been incarcerated, my dad had been incarcerated, and we, you know, my dad was in and out, and we were dealing with not having them there, and then also the additive of not having them physically there sometimes, because they were in and out. My mom would get us every weekend. My dad would kind of show up through his addiction, and, you know, we would still see them, but then there were the points, the times where they were incarcerated and we did not see them. And so I found a way to cope. My way of coping was food. And today I know that I have a food addiction. I have a food addiction to flour, sugar, and quantities, meaning that when anything in my life happens, anything that's upsetting, anything that's outside of what we, the society, says is the norm, I'll go and I'll grab something to eat. I'll eat something until it comforts me. And that started for me at an early age. So I lived a life of an obese child in elementary school. I was not looked at as a person that was, you know, most likely to do this or had a lot of friends. I knew people, but, you know, I really wasn't friends with everyone. And I remember a very pivotal moment in sixth grade in the coat room. There was a young man there, and he said something that stuck with me. And I think that that opened up the portal for my depression. He told me, he said, you know, you would be very pretty if you weren't so fat. Now, I had already looked at myself as being that way. You know, I looked in the mirror. I know what I look like. You know, the girls were wearing jeans that had pockets on the back. My jeans didn't have pockets on the back. I'm wearing, in sixth grade, women clothes and not, you know, for my age. So, you know, I already had that stigma to know that I was already different because I didn't dress like them. And I looked in the mirror and I didn't look like them. But now here's this boy in my class telling me that he sees that I don't look like them. So it's one thing when you know it, but then when you look at it and the entire environment knows it. And that was an eye-opener for me of depression, where I started to do more of the eating. I started to do more of the self-isolation. You know, there are many of us in our youth, we can remember and very fond memories of going outside and playing or, you know, doing things with their friends. And my fondest memories are actually sitting at my grandmother's house on the back porch with a plate and a television. And those are my youthful memories. I can remember my god sister and I, we wanted food so much that we had actually stolen change from my grandmother to go sit at a carryout, which sells Chinese food and some American food. And we just sat there and we ordered up so much food. Now, mind you, we're two young girls, and this is what we're doing to actually bring ourselves some type of enjoyment, peace, some solace. She dealt with a couple of things with her mom and things like that, and I was dealing with in my family. And so that's my great escape. That's what I found joy in. That's what brought me relaxation, no matter how it looked on the outside. I've learned that, you know, even though we may internalize things and we may not speak about them, we may not share about them, but they'll eventually show up on the outside. It's just like a sickness. You know, if you have a cancer or if you have some type of ailment, it's going to start in the inside, but then eventually it will surface to the outside to where it's undeniable that there's something wrong. And so that's the beginning of everything for me. I went to junior high school, still, you know, overweight, even went to high school a little bit earlier. And in high school, the girls were getting so much attention from the boys, and I so desired to have that attention. I so desired to have that affection, but it was not coming. And then one day, all of a sudden, there was somebody who paid attention to me. There was someone who noticed me, and that someone was not the same someone that was noticing everyone else. It was a female, and that was the beginning of me living the alternative lifestyle. And that was sort of a trap for me. It's not necessarily the life that I wanted to live. And, you know, for those who are in that lifestyle, you know, to each its own. But for me, I took part in that lifestyle only because I was desperate for love. I was desperate for attention. And any way, any shape, form, or fashion that I could get it, I was willing to go to those levels, those depths, just to receive the attention that I wanted. And that was an eye opener for me. That was relationships that opened, that started drug abuse, that started alcoholism, that started me hanging out with different friends or people I thought were my friends that were stealing cars, and, you know, we were joyriding. And it was just a whole portal of things opened up as I tapped into that world, that environment. And I tried to have a boyfriend. I eventually went off to Tuskegee University. And, you know, for me, whenever I entered into a new environment, I could recreate myself. But in the recreation of myself, deep down on the inside still lied Kiana. And so even though I was at Tuskegee University, I was at one of the most black prominent colleges in the nation. I was going to school to be a veterinarian. I did nothing. Oh. I partied. I majored in 101 partying. I mean, any activity that was outside of the typical school realm is what I did while I was there. Even having the boyfriend, you know, just getting into that newness, this was something new for me, having this relationship. And the relationship didn't even start, you know, with a communication of, hey, I like you, you like me. It was, you know, I was hanging out with this gentleman, and, you know, all of a sudden I would spend the night there in his dorm room, which I wasn't even supposed to be there. And in that, you know, one night he was touching me, and I tried to pretend that I was asleep. And another night he did it again, and I said, well, if you want to do this, then you're going to have to be my boyfriend. So I started a relationship with stipulations. I started a relationship, well, if you give me this, then I'll give you that. You know, and that's been pretty much what my life was, you know, even started living in the lesbian lifestyle. If you give me love, if you show me the attention that I want, well, then I'm going to give it to you back, only because that's what I need. That's what I feel my soul is seeking. But when I was in Tuskegee, there was a strange moment that happened for me in life. Even though I was in the relationship, I was partying and doing everything that I thought I wanted to do, there was still that Kiana from the past that was deep down inside. And I found myself with a whole bottle of Percocet and some alcohol and some marijuana. And there's a section of the campus called the Valley. And the Valley, if you look up the definition of the Valley, it's a state in between high and low. And that's exactly right. Where I was. Ironically, I was there in my emotional state, but I was also there in a physical state. And I did not want to live anymore. And I took that bottle, and I sat there on the stoop. And that's the last that I remember until waking up in my dorm room. I don't know how I got there. I don't know what the processes were, but I knew that I was angry. I was upset. I was disappointed. I was hurt. I was broken. I did not understand how I could still have life. You're supposed to be God who gives me peace, who gives me the things that I need, the things that I want. And what I wanted most desperately was to not be able to feel this pain anymore, but you still woke me up. In that moment, wow. I did not understand what the future held. I did not understand what my purpose was for. And that's another a reason why I relate my life so much to Paul's life, because he was in a space where he had did so much stuff so opposite of what the cross says that we should do, that he was in a position that when he couldn't see that, he didn't want to live anymore. And I eventually came home. I was working in McDonald's and all different types of jobs, just anything and everything. And my mom said to me, she said, Kiana, you love animals. You know that that's what you're supposed to be doing. Why don't you go get a job and work with some animals? And so I did that, and I was excited. I called her. I said, Mom, I got the job. And I'm proud to say that today, this past Thanksgiving, my mom celebrated 30 years of sobriety, of being clean.
Oh, wonderful.
And praise God, he's wonderful. And in that, she said, well, I knew you would get the job. You know, today she is my faithful cheerleader, my ride or die. You know, a couple of years ago, we didn't have the best of relationships. But today, whenever there's anything going on, she's right there. I pick up the phone, I call her. She's my everything. Like, that's oh, that's my cheerleader. I love my mom with everything. But I thank God because of the processes that, you know, we had to go through in realizing that, you know, in forgiveness, I had to look at my mom and say or understand that, you know, before she was Kiana's mother, before she was Kiana brother's mother, she was herself. And a lot of the times we place identity and roles on people. We place roles on the people's identity and not realizing that they were who they were before they were whatever they were to us. And today I'm able to separate the two of, you know, the relationship that we had in the beginning because she was young. She was still getting to know herself, not even knowing who she truly was, going through those things. And here she is having children. But just getting in a space of knowing your identity and knowing exactly who you are will allow for you to operate in a space of forgiveness and not putting expectations on others as well. And so that's one of the things that I've learned today through forgiveness. But in that search for that job and getting that job and finding that job, I was still in a space of not being whole within my heart and still seeking that love and attention. And I ended up dating a woman that was nearly my mom's age at that time. And I was around 19 years old when I started dating this person. And everything was great, so I thought. You know, I was in this relationship. I had this job, and, you know, I moved in with her, and everything was just great, so that I thought. But it wasn't until some things hit the fan that I realized what was going on. In our relationship, nearing my 21st birthday, she had lost her job, and she was the provider. She had made sure that I had any type of clothing that I wanted at that particular point, cell phone, even my drug habit. She provided all of those things for me. I was kind of separated from the world that I knew, meaning my mom and my grandparents and my brother. I didn't pretty much hang out with them too much. I was in a world with her, kind of separate from the life that I had knew prior to her. And once she had lost her job, she was really in a low space, really, really in a low space. And my god sister and I wanted to go out to a club, and we wanted to have fun, kind of take it back to the old school and go to church the next Sunday, just, you know, just some fellowship. And I called myself going to the mall. She was supposed to buy me some things, my girlfriend at that time, and I left and I went to the mall, my god sister and I, and we had got pretty much everything at that point in time. She hadn't given me the money yet, and she called me on my phone and wanted to know where I was, and I shared that I was at the mall, and she was really upset because she hadn't given me the money, and I'd never seen her this upset. And she told me to come home, and I kind of lingered around a little bit, and I eventually got there. My god sister was in the living room. We had a 3-bedroom apartment, and the living room and the bedroom were kind of sectioned off. They were not close to one another. And so as I entered the room, it became an altercation between she and I, to the point where she was shoving money at me, telling me to take it, and I was really baffled because I didn't understand why I was in this situation, why she was behaving this way. All she had to do was give my god sister the money back. It just wasn't making sense, and it wasn't lining up to me. And we were in the closet, and then all of a sudden she pushed me, I pushed her. She started tearing off of the clothing, I mean literally underwear. She tore them off of my body, creating like a wedgie, like, and cutting me in my sanitary area and things of that nature. It's just wow. Really, really a painful moment. And I mean, just to share how rough it was. And then all of a sudden, the next thing I knew, I was up against the wall and her hands were around my neck. And I was trying to claw at her, trying to get her away from my neck. She was choking me. And I was looking at her, and I really couldn't even realize or see the person that I knew, because it was like I was looking at a stranger at that point. And all of a sudden, as I'm doing this, I realized that I'm slowly sliding down the wall. And as I'm sliding, I'm looking at her, and I'm seeing this person that I don't know. And I stopped trying to fight her, and I started trying to ungrip her fingers from around my neck. And then all of a sudden, it's like something clicked, and I dropped and I fell to the floor. That was a moment, you know, I wanted to take my life before, but here was a moment where I wasn't ready to go. I didn't think that it was my time. And here is a person that I thought loved me. allowed for me, or they did these things where they were hurting me, and it was so much of a back and forth after that. You know, if you leave me, then I'm going to kill myself. And I was upset because my parents had a domestic violence relationship, and I said I would never be that person. This would never happen to me. And so I left. I took some things and I went back to what was my comfort zone. So needless to say, that night never happened of going back and having that fun. But I went back to my grandmother's house and she accepted me in. And a week or 2 weeks passed by, and next thing you know, I was reaching out to her saying I needed some clothing. And, you know, and for me, that was an addict behavior because I was missing what I knew that I didn't need, but I wanted to go back because it was what I knew. And so when I went back, I said, well, I'm not coming in. I'm not going to come in. I'm going to sit outside in the car, and then you can bring me my stuff. And so as I did that, you know, the interaction was okay. I took some bags through the door, and the next thing I know is her hand reached out to touch me, and I was sitting in the driver's seat, and before you knew it, I was in the passenger seat. And it was such a fast motion, I didn't even realize it happened. Now, come on, think about a car now. The car has the console in the middle, and, you know, I'm in the driver's seat, and literally I'm in the passenger seat before I can even realize that I've moved. And in that moment, I realized that I was broken. I realized that I was damaged. But somehow I still went back. I went back. I opened up myself because I missed that love, or what I thought was love and attention that was coming from her. And as she no longer had a job, she wanted to still continue to provide for me. And so she decided that she wanted to commit a crime and that I needed to help her. All I needed to do was drive the vehicle. And so that crime was an armed robbery crime. And as I become the getaway driver, I thought that I was just the ride or die chick. You know, I'm here. I'm here for it. You know, I love you. I'm going to support you. You know, but all of that happened. And the next thing I know, the police were looking for me. And the very next moment after that, I'm running around the city. I'm changing my hair color. I'm doing all of these different things. She had kids at that point in time, kids that were close to my age that I'm trying to help get in school. I mean, just my life was just a total mess. And then the police called, and they wanted to meet with me. And it was on Minnesota Avenue in Washington, D.C., across the street from a subway station. They pulled me over. We talked, and I got in the back of the car, and they took me to a police station. And that was the last that I would ever see of Washington, D.C. for 4 years of my life.
Wow.
I went to prison. And believe it or not, it was the absolute best thing that God could have ever done for me. Because in that state, I realized today, the way that I was going, ecstasy pills, marijuana, alcohol, any type of, that they call them dippers, where the PCP, and it almost every drug besides heroin and crack, I've tried, and I even fathomed trying crack. But I remembered my parents in that moment, and I got out of that house with those drugs, and I got them away from me because I wonder, you know, my mind went to, you know, well, I wonder. And that wonder was like, no, you don't wonder. You need to get rid of that.
Yeah.
But in my cell, you know, I come across so many different women. I traveled when I was in prison. I was a world traveling prisoner. I went to D.C. jail. I was in CCA. Then they sent me to Paulding County, Georgia. Then I went to Danbury, Connecticut. Then I went to FDC, Philadelphia. But the thing about it is, you know, imagine having your life at someone else's choices, at someone else's beck and call. You know, in any of those situations when I went to those places, it was never, oh, let me look online. Let me see, you know, I'm going to catch a flight here. You know, I woke up, your name was on a list, and it's time to go. So anything and everything that you knew the day before, it all changes now. And so I lived that way for 4 years of my life, not knowing, you know, whether I was going to be here for this amount of time, there for that amount of time, and, you know, just having those rules. But I realized that there was something different about me from some of the women that I met, because some of them, they had gone home, and then they'd come back, and I'm looking at you like, are you crazy? Like, are you crazy?
Right,
why are you back here? You know, you need to go. And I realized that a lot of the things that happened in my life were because I had expectation of people. But as children, you don't realize what an expectation is. You just know that this is daddy and you know that this is mommy and this is what they're supposed to do. Because that's what society tells us. But as I become, as I got older and I realized that they were themselves and that they were dealing with their own demons and they really couldn't be there for us. Now, some people are strong. Some people can fight through it. Some people can say, I'm not doing this, and they can make it and they can prevail. But then there are others where the addictions or whatever their environment is taking control over them, and they can't handle, they can't deal, they can't process. And it takes their time. It takes, you know, God speaking to them in their own individual space. And prison was my space. I'd gotten back to so much of Kiana that I'd thrown away. The other day I shared something on Facebook where my husband, we had a conversation. He noticed that there was a stone missing from my ring. And God spoke volumes to me about that stone because it made me think about how many times in life we lose things because I hadn't realized I lost it now. Sandy, I did not realize that this ring, this stone was gone out of my ring. And we're walking around daily, and our faith is dropping away from us, and we're not realizing it. Our passions are dropping away from us, but we're still walking through life as if there's nothing wrong. We haven't taken the time to pay attention to it. We haven't taken the time to nurture ourselves, to love on ourselves. The other day on Forgiveness Friday, I talked about self-relationship, having a relationship with your creator so that you can have a relationship with yourself so that you can then be available for others in the world. And those are the things that I did not do up until that prison sentence. And that time, those 4 years in that prison cell allowed for me to reactivate, to reopen, to dissect, to get in a place of that three-pronged tool, reveal, release, and regain your confidence. Because I had to reveal everything that happened to me in life. I had nothing but time to sit there and think about it. And I had to realize that everything I blamed and placed on my dad, because I'd gotten over it with my mom, but my dad, I blamed him for a lot of things, why I was in the lifestyle, why I went to drugs, why I was in prison. I blamed all of that on him, but I had to realize that beyond the things that my father did, all of the choices and the decisions that I made that landed me in prison were my own. So I had that's where forgiveness comes from. I had to forgive my father because, of course, I said he was a man before he was my father. And then I had to forgive, first I had to forgive myself because I allowed for myself to be in that position and then my father and then, you know, other things that happened in my life and realized that I am, with Christ, the person who is able to create my environment because God gives us all free will. And I love that he gives us the free will to do the things that we do in life and to also learn from the mistakes because those mistakes are character building. Those mistakes allow for us to become more present, not just for ourselves, but more present in the world. And so I take all of my experiences, everything that I've learned. I said when I was in prison that I was not coming back. I had gotten back into writing, one of the precious gems that I had let fall away. I had gotten back into reading, one of the precious gems that I had let falling away because I was so attached to having love and emotion that I didn't realize that I could start to love myself first. And the way that I love myself would then open up what was attracted to me. So when we're living and not loving ourselves, then we're attracting ourselves to things that are not loving to us or conducive for us. And so I learned all of that in those prisons. And I also learned about some of the amazing women that are there that have been stuck in the trap, that have been in a toxic mindset, rejection, that have been afraid and that have been in pain. But I do know that once they've gotten in that space, some of them have turned around to be just bold, to be pure bold, to be a believer, an overcomer, a leader, and a destiny grabber, because they've been taken all of the things such as I and turned them around to use them for the community, to use them for to be an uplifting to the kingdom, to use them for the environment, to even go back to those people. See, one of my missions is to go back to those women who have not realized everything that God has created them to be, because I was in that situation where I did not realize that for majority of my life. And so today I am walking out in those purposes. But after all of that brokenness, I had to rebuild. Sure. And rebuilding looks like gaining your confidence again. Because if you look at it, once you've been in a relationship that I was in, I realized that I thought it was a loving relationship, but overall I realized that I was in a domestic violence relationship with a woman. She was
abusing
me. But
you said no boundaries, though.
Yeah.
No
boundaries at whatsoever, because the boundary was not there because of what I felt I needed in order to have the love. So it was boundless. Because whatever she needed, whatever she wanted to do, I accepted, because that was what I thought love was.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't know what love is, you don't know how to truly receive it. And that's where that self-love comes in, where you have to learn to love yourself first. You have to become centered in order to do that. But in that brokenness, after that relationship, you have to heal to understand, sweetie, you can be loved again. But you have to know how to love, and the only way that you can know how to love is if you love yourself. And that's a part of building confidence. That's a part of stepping out and to know that, you know, I was hurt in this before, but today I'm going to do a little bit more so that I can build my confidence in that relationship, whether it's, you know, doing some self-help things, journaling, reading, getting in small groups. I love small groups. I love having accountability partners. I love being able to voice those things with other people. One of the things I did not too long ago was called A Journey Back to Me. And in A Journey Back to Me, the processes are really just looking at the things that happen in your day, dissecting them so that you don't carry them into the day, because there are three things that you can do within your day. Or three things about the calendar, I'm sorry, three things about the calendar. There's going to be yesterday, there's going to be today, and there's going to be tomorrow. And yesterday, you can't change what happened yesterday, but you can think about it so you don't take it into tomorrow. And then the thing that happens today, you can start the processes in the beginning of the day so that the things that you did in yesterday are not going to be repeated. But then in tomorrow, you don't worry about tomorrow until tonight. Tonight, I'm planning what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Right.
You have to learn to stay present in the day. And when you're in the trap, you're in yesterday. And then sometimes we're so far into tomorrow that we're not able to be present for today. And today is where life is. And so doing those small things that will help you build that confidence in today. Today, I am going to X, Y, and Z towards whatever, you know, right? Because, like, some people, they're in debt. And while you're in debt, it's like, well, I got this bill, I got that bill, I got this, I got this, I got that. And it's like, well, what can you do today about that? What small step can you do today to achieve what you're trying to get to in the future? Because you can't handle all of that in today. All of those things that are going on, you cannot deal with that today. So you have to pick that one, that two, or maybe three things that you're going to deal with within that day. But then you also have to have that time for you. I got to have my Kiana time. I got to have that my quiet time where I am just in communication with my creator, where I am reading, where I am feeding back into my soul the things that I have allowed to be depleted. Because, honey, let me tell you, sometimes we got some days that happen. It's like, woo!
Yes, ma'am.
That was a lot.
Yep. Hey, look, Kiana, we got a caller that has been very patient. I'm going to open up the line.
I told you I can go.
Well, you know, I love your story, and you gave us such a wide view of your life. And so I understand why you did what you did. Sometimes, you know, we miss certain spots, but, no, your story was very complete. I enjoyed it. All right,
caller,
your line is opened up.
Yes, ma'am.
No testimony.
Sandy, Madeline.
Hey, Madeline.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, very good, very good.
Thank you for being so patient.
Oh, please. It's my passion to be a part of this community with you, Sandy, truly.
Thank you.
Beautiful thing. Kiana, I'm listening to your story, and so much of how you perceived your life and how you chose what you chose, I relate so closely to that kind of lifestyle for myself, and you know, even taking a bottle, of Valium because I couldn't find a way out, and it was like, you know, I'm either gonna find something or you know just end it because this isn't working. And so you know, listening to you, and then you know, we all get to a place. Not all of us, but you got to a place. I got to a place where you recognize. I recognize that I have value, and what am I going to? You know, I'm asking God, what do you want from me? Whatever you want for my life, I'm here to be of service. And so I've been, you know, getting these incredible instructions, directions, and 5 years ago started our Smile Club, and last January we started our Smile Club gatherings. We gather once a week and we talk about conscious communication, and recognizing, and I hammer this into the conversation as often as I can about taking care of yourself first, and relating the Mother Teresa story about taking care of yourself first, and because if you don't take care of yourself first, you don't have the strength to take care of anybody.
No, you don't. That is so awesome. Thank you for calling in. Self-care is really, really important to me today, and I love the group that you have, the Smile Group. That made me think about one day I was in a Walmart parking lot, and I realized that Christ lives in me, right? And I know that sometimes I'm going to be the only representation that some people may see of him. And no, I'm not perfect by far, and I have days that are not the greatest. And sometimes I don't have that smile, but that particular day, there was a woman who walked in the parking lot, and I didn't even realize I smiled at her. And she stopped me, and she said, "Ma'am, I just want to thank you so much for that smile. You have no idea what that smile did for me today." So when you said that, it made me think about your organization, your group that you have, and smiles are so needed. You know, it's something that's really, really small. It's something that's so hard for some people to do. I mean, literally hard for some people to do, but there's a freedom in it. You know, there's such a freedom in it.
It's a beautiful thing because it's all about healing our world one smile at a time.
Yes. Amen.
Beautiful. You're beautiful.
Thank you. And you're in the Atlanta area as well?
No, I'm in near Sedona, Arizona.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, I would love to connect with you on social media. I'd love to become a part of your smile community. If you have something on social media, so I am Kiana F. Brown or Kiana T. Fields Brown on Facebook, and I would love to connect because I love smiles.
Sweet. Lovely.
Evelyn doesn't do social media.
Oh, the world needs to know about your smiles.
Well, it's our smileclub.com is my website.
Awesome.
And it's because I'm not a techie and I'm not a real computer person. I mean, I know how to get around my computer. Mm-hmm. I don't put a lot of energy and time into my computer. So even our smileclub.com needs a webmaster to get things going, and that's not me. So it's been sitting there for about a year and a half, and I just keep putting it out there, asking God, source, you know, bring me somebody who wants to take on our smileclub.com and have it go around the world, because I've shared over 9,000 smile cards with people. So we're, you know, we really are all over the world from people in different parts of the world who I've given these cards to. And yesterday I was walking through the supermarket and I had a stack of them in my hand, and I was just walking up to people and saying, hi, here's your smile for the day. Keep it for the rest of the year. And I'd walk away. And
wow.
I had 15 cards in my hand, and
that
I gave 15 cards away. So
well,
much fun.
This is what we're going to do today. Today we are going to operate in the space of forgiveness. I like to say that anything that we've not done or that we've put a pause on, we need to get into the space of activating that. And so I always say, well, today I'm forgiving myself for that. You know, I'm going to move on. I'm going to do this. So today you're going to forgive yourself for that, and we're going to connect off of this line. There's something that God has done for me amazing. He's putting a spirit in my heart to help. And I've shared with you about 2 years ago, I was afraid of the computer. Did not want to touch it. Don't ask me to type nothing. Don't ask me to do anything. Today, I've taken online courses. I've taken courses of knowing how to operate social media. I know how to do flyers. I know how to do just about anything that you can think about doing. I also even have connections with people who do things, simple things, not, you know, it doesn't have to be extravagant, but we need to get you started, because people need to know it doesn't just need to be, I mean, and it's great, it's awesome. I love the connection of the community, but there's a world out there that you need to be able to touch with these smiles, that you need to be able to share this information with. So however, Sandy, if you have our information, we will connect. And we will make this. When I tell you I'm a pusher, like that's one thing that God has placed in my spirit from being in all of the different situations that I've been in. Because as I listen to what Sandy was sharing about me, that's the perseverance that God. Because I look at it, and I don't even see how, I don't understand how I did half the stuff that I did. But
exactly.
I know that God has allowed for me to be a pusher, not just of myself, but a pusher of others. Not pushing you off a cliff, because UWA, we help people find and create their purpose, right? And this is a purpose that the kingdom needs. The kingdom needs to have more smiles, because there's so many things as it relates to your health that if you just smile, you know, instead of using all those muscles to frown or allowing for whatever is going on the inside, and realizing that sometimes even though the things are going on the inside, it does not have to show on the outside. We talked about how things start on the outside, but they fester on the outside. You'll see them materialize on the outside, what's really going on the inside. But I've learned today that, you know, with the faith that I have, that even though it seems like that, I still smile, because I know that this is only a testimony. This is another chapter that God is writing in my book, and I don't want to bring any damper to it. I don't want to bring it down, because half the people won't even know the things that I'm going through right now. When I tell you I have my hands filled with problems, I'm really open, honest, and transparent, because I know that that's how we heal. But at the end of the day, if you see me on the street, if you see me on the Facebook, if you see me on the Instagram, there's a smile. But I'll never say that I'm not going through anything, because I'm dealing with a lot. But at the end of the day, I know that I can smile through this because Christ gives me strength. I know that I can be uplifted through this because there's going to be an other side. I know that I can go through this because the only way through this is to go through it. And so that those people need to know that even though whatever's going on in their world, what's happening in their environment, that they can smile through it.
Absolutely, absolutely. People have approached me because they'll catch me smiling at them, or catch me smiling and they look over and think I'm smiling at them, and I'm just smiling.
Mm.
I walk over and say, do you know me? And I'll say, what's your name? Jane. Well, my name's Madeline. We know each other now, don't we?
That is awesome.
It's fun. It's just fun. Being with people, playing with people is fun. It's fun.
Yes, it is.
When I'm out in the world, I have fun.
So. Smiling is being able to be available. Right.
Yeah.
When you see somebody and they're not smiling, they're not approachable. They're not available for you. And you're letting people know that, hey, I'm available.
Great. So true. So
well,
true.
I don't think that Madeline has that type of energy because I don't think it can even penetrate her, because when she comes into a room or in the presence of other people, it all shifts, you know, and so there is no.
That's that
no,
culture shifting.
Yeah. And so she brings that with her. You know what I'm saying? So there's never any darkness when Madeline is present. So.
Amen. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Sandy.
Oh, man, I mean that with all of my heart.
Well, I know you wouldn't say it if it weren't your truth.
That's right.
I was actually thinking about the Water of Life symposium, saying, "Oh my goodness, I have to wait all this time to see Sandy."
Oh no, I'm going to be in your area February the 4th.
Oh, right. You did. Yeah.
Coming to Arizona. So I met Madeline last year, Kiona, and and we talk every week, at least once, sometimes twice, if not more. She's a very loyal supporter of the radio program, and she has so much to share and to give to the world. So. I welcome her insights and her wisdom as a part of what we do here. I wanted to get back into if there were steps that you took. You talked briefly about the process of writing and being still and making that concentrated connection with God, with spirit, with love, with the universal life force. And so in that process of loving on you, what were some of the things that you did, some of the other steps that you may have taken in addition to that to get your life turned around?
So the first thing, and we'll talk about my three-prong tool is revealing, releasing, and regaining your confidence. And so in revealing, that's where some of the writing comes. But then also taking responsibility. I had to take responsibility for my actions, and I had to understand that, you know, these things may have happened. These things have led me to where I am today, but I can move on from here. And that's some of where the writing process comes from writing out everything. You know, it's one thing when you think about things, and it's another when you start to write it and actually share it. And when I say share it, I mean that's going into the next thing of releasing it. And I love to have sounding boards. I know that there's a oneness with having that relationship with yourself, but sharing with others, I like to either share with the person that I have offended, or if it's just a sounding board, you know, maybe it's something that I've done and to myself, or something that I've allowed to happen, to share that with a close person. And an example of a release for me is when I was writing in my second book, it's a collaboration called Breaking Free Forever, The Momentous Journey. And some amazing women in that book, myself and three other women. And it's a part of BFF Nation. I like to always shout them out because literally without that collaboration, I probably wouldn't be on this phone with you. Because that's where I realized I had more purpose than I was living in. But I had written a chapter about my mom. And everyone that I had written about in that book, I said, I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to share with them what it is that I've written. And I read it to a sounding board, someone who, you know, kind of helps me edit and do different things. And I read it to her, and she was like, okay, I mean, it doesn't, you know, because in writing, I don't ever want to put the other person down, because
right.
What I'm doing is sharing my perspective of the person, right?
Exactly.
And that necessarily doesn't give you a full picture of who that person is. So I share about my experience, but not in a damaging way to the person, just, you know, the encounters that we had. And so, you know, it went well. It went totally fine. And then it was time for me to share it with my mother. And I read it to her. Now, I had just read this to the other woman about 2 days ago, just read through it, boom, 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 went through, done. But as I was reading it to my mom, I started to release. Now, in writing, I was just sharing that portion of my life. I was just sharing that encounter, but did not realize that I was holding or harboring resentment in that until I actually released it to her. And when I released
by
it to her, there were tears.
Okay.
And it was such a, the feeling, if I can explain it, was after it's rained, and there's that freshness, and like you go outside and you just feel the cleanness of the air. That's how I felt after I shared that, and it kind of took me back, because I was like, wow, you know, when you realize, and that's another thing that God has allowed for me to grow in is realization, seeing when I'm there, allowing for me to catch my emotions as they're in action, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. we do things and we may think about it like later, but today God has allowed for me to be able to catch my emotions or to realize in situations when I'm repeating a behavior that I've done previously before. Today He's letting me know that, you know, this is a direct result of why you're doing this, because this is how you're feeling at that moment. He's allowed for me to see my emotions as they're happening. And so I, in that situation with my mom, I realized the emotions that I had in that situation with her that I didn't really know that were there. And I believe that that's a really big derivative of why we get into the positions or the relationships or the situationships, I like to call them, not really relationships, but just something that you're doing, because we are not able to be centered with our emotions. And that's what releasing and writing does for me. So when I always talk with someone, you know, and they have something going on, I'm like, write about it. Just write about it.
Yes.
Write about it and see, you know, see what feelings come out, because some of the times in the writing, it's almost like meditation. You know, when you're in a meditated state and you're thinking, you're just going through, that's what writing does. You're able to write, and one thought will lead to the next thought, to the next thought, to the next thought, and it's like you're able to remove layers. It's like peeling back an onion. You know, you're going through layer through layer through layer while you're writing, and you don't even sometimes realize all of that is underneath, you know, all of that's buried there. And so that's what I like to do with this releasing. So revealing just actually is taking acceptance of what is. Releasing is, you know, for writing it and then sharing it with the person that you offended, or sharing it with another person that you just need to release it to. Because sometimes when you share things that you have a trusted source that you can share stuff with, they're able to give you sound advice, or they're able to have a different perspective. And I love interacting with other people because just as we shared in the beginning, the set-aside prayer, when we share things with other people, we have to set aside everything that we think we know, because sometimes they can see the picture bigger than what we can see it, right? Because we're actually in the frame, and they're looking at the total picture. They can see each part of it, because they're not in it. And so releasing and writing and sharing with people in that way, I think it really, really helps to allow for you to look at things different. But you got to remember, you got to set aside everything that you think you thought you knew about yourself, about your spiritual path, and even about God.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question, though, because you said it twice now. You say you want to share with the person that you've offended. So Are you taking the assumption that everything that you've written is in regard to somebody offending you? So are you not writing about happy moments, but just
no,
you're
so
writing about
I'm actually – I like that you said that because a lot of – just in general conversation, there are a lot of times where forgiveness needs to happen because we've offended someone. But then also sometimes people don't realize that you need to forgive when you've been the offender, right? When you've offended someone, mm-hmm. you need to be able to release that. And there are sometimes where we don't even know what we've done. We don't even know why we're in a situation, but being able to release in that area as well, you know, you don't know why you're there. And sometimes writing can help you figure that out. But there's a journal, a devotional that I'm doing. It's a 90-day devotional. It's called A Journey Back to Me. It's based upon the 90-day Facebook Live that I did. I went live for 90 days. But I want people to write out your negative emotions, your positive emotions. I want you to take a scripture for the day. So it's really, really positive. So what I'm sharing is when you're in a moment or you're dealing with something where you need a release from where you've been offended or somebody's offended you. But in our daily lives, thanks for enlightening that so that I could bring clarity to it. But in our daily lives, when we're just writing, like I say, we need to do that self-check-in with ourselves so that we don't take yesterday into tomorrow and so that we can live in today, is realizing where you are in those days. So in the journal, there's going to be things that you write in the morning and things that you write in the evening, because a lot of the times your emotional state is not the same as it was when you walked out the house as when you come back
in.
Oh,
for sure, yeah.
And so so just identifying all of those things, just getting it out of your head, right? That's just like when you have a business plan or you have something, you know, that you have a desire in your head, you have a thought. Sometimes when you write it down, it's not what it looked like in your head. Or, you know, when you have to get that business plan together, when you write it down, it doesn't always materialize the way you wanted it to. Sometimes it does. But that's what writing it down, I think it says it in Habakkuk 2:2, write the vision and make it plain. And so our visions mm-hmm. are not just things that we want to happen, but the visions are the things that we think about in our day, the things that we, you know, that happen through our day. Because you have to realize that if we're having a problem, sometimes the problem can become our meditation. And so in your meditation, you're having visions over and over and over again of whatever it is that you've gone through. And that's one of the things that I like to separate in having meditations, is to remembering that we're not going to totally meditate on our problems. We're going to meditate on the word, because the Bible says that we should meditate on the word, because that's going to be within our heart. So the longer we continue to meditate on problems, then we bring life to it. There's going to be a moment where you got to write it out. You got to put it out there, but it can't consume you. It can't be your every moment thought. So that's why I like to do it in the morning and the evening, or even when you're having that, that spirit of hurt or disappointment, to write so that you can share those experiences through paper so that you can get the real deal, right? Because when we think about it, sometimes our thoughts are just our own imaginations until we write it out. Sometimes we can imagine that something is what it is and we can magnify it, right? Whatever you magnify, it grows, it becomes larger. And if it's just something that's becoming larger in our head and we're not able to see it at plain view sight, then that's what it's going to say. Our imagination stuck in that pain, stuck in that hurt, stuck in that mindset, until you get that out and then have that sounding board to actually say, hey, okay, well, no, you're not off for thinking this way, or maybe let's look at it another way. So I really, really love that. And then building the confidence in those areas where you have been broken or where you want to move away from, so that you can get to those spaces. And what that looks like is a day at a time, right? Every day you have the opportunity to build more towards whatever it is that you want to see grow. And I like to look at, I love to talk about trees, and I love to talk about the processes of trees, because I know that we God has made us to be trees that bear fruit. And so in bearing that fruit, you want to make sure that you have the proper soil. Your tree can grow, but sometimes you have to get in the space of pruning it. And when you prune your tree, you're able to take away the dead and diseased. You're able to remove branches, and that's going to allow for you to have elevation in areas. That's going to allow for you to have a clearer mindset. That's one of the things that you prune. You take away some of the branches so that you can have a clear vision, right? Because sometimes you want to be able to see through the tree, and that's a part of the landscaping that they do in the natural. But in the spiritual realm, if you remove some of those branches, you can have more vision. If you remove some of those branches, then it'll give your tree a more of an elevated look, so that you can see bigger than what you've been seeing. And those things allow for you to build confidence when you're able to do the small steps towards it each day, and then also realize the things that you need to take out of the equation. Because there are some things that we're doing in life that are allowing us to not walk in that confidence and being able to realize what those things are. But then that all stems back to writing out your processes, whatever it is. So writing is an ever ready tool for all of these steps. I believe that writing has been my catalyst for healing. Even when I was in a cell, I was writing plays that the prisoners actually put into production. That was a way of me getting out experiences that I had. You know, that's why I said, we talked about those gems, like my husband told me my stone fell away, those gems that have fallen away, and you're continuously walking through life and you don't even realize, you know, all of the things that you're let dying, and you just keep going and you don't even realize they're gone. And I had a passion for writing. In the ninth grade, I was introduced to writing, and I really, really loved it. I enjoyed it. But however, throughout life experiences, that's something that I just kept walking, and it fell off, and I didn't even realize that I lost it.
Right, right.
And so writing has been a tool of healing for me, a tool of getting to my next destination in life, getting to the purpose that God has actually planned for me. So today I can be at work. I have a pet grooming business. I'm grooming dogs. That's been a passion of mine.
Like I said,
I went to Tuskegee because I wanted to be a veterinarian. But in the processes of grooming, you know, I can listen to something. And that's another thing. I love listening to motivational things. And God will just give me a thought, and, you know, I'll write that down. That's me writing the vision. Because sometimes when we keep those things in our head, they'll either be watered down, they'll either go away, or we're not able to operate in what it was because it's not what he gave us in that moment.
Good point. So you still do have that love for the animals and taking care of them.
Yes.
That's wonderful. That's what keeps you grounded, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us again how to get in contact with you.
Sure.
You can
follow me. Okay, you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at The Forgiveness Expert. You can go to the website, which is www.kiannafbrown.com. That's K-Y-O-N-N-A-F as in Frank, .com. And there are some programs that I have coming up soon in February. You know, the beginning of the year is, you know, how people say 2020 clear vision, or, you know, I'm putting out all of the things that I'm going to do in the new year. Well, I was going to start my program in January, but I said, you know what, let's get past that. We're going to do it in February because I know you're ready in February.
Yeah.
So in February, we're having the Live It, Do It, Be It 3-Day Confidence Mastery, where we'll be going through 3 days of intimate connection with one another. And that is, I think the registration is open for that now. So if you can find it on Eventbrite, Live It, Do It, Be It 3-Day Confidence Mastery. This is the second year for doing it, and I revamped it just in case someone enjoyed it so much last year that they want to come back. So you're not getting the same material. This year we're talking about rebuilding. So that's going to be amazing. I can't wait for that. It's going to be on a platform, but the way that you get invited to that platform is if you register at Eventbrite.
Okay,
so if you go to Eventbrite,
Yes,
this is online. I do a lot of things online because it's more convenient. for me to be able to get in contact with people across the world. I believe that the nation needs to hear about forgiveness, and it's not just in my own backyard. So being able to have that portal where I can have that connection with others across the world, I believe it makes that much of a difference. And I know this is far off, but in 2020 in July, I'm doing my first what people would call a conference, but I call it the Interchange. It's mind, body, and soul. And that's where we're taking you actively from one state of mind to the next state so that you can build your purpose, find out what it is, create impact in the world, and build confidence while doing it. So that's going to be an event where I'm celebrating my 40th birthday with everybody Woo-hoo! That's coming together, leaving from one state to the next state, and that's where we're taking everyone. As I'm leaving that state physically, I'm leaving that state mentally as well, and I'm just taking everybody along with me.
Awesome. So that's July.
That's July, yes.
Okay. Cool. And the Live It, Do It, Be It was February. Is that correct?
Yes, that's going to be at the end of February. Yep, and so they go and register now on Eventbrite. We're opening it up at the beginning of February, so we can. There's going to be a community where we can get to know each other, and there are going to be some downloads in the group for people so that they can get ready. I believe that, you know, a lot of people, when they come to events, whether they're online or whether they're in person, you know, you come and you don't know what to expect. It's one thing to not know what to expect, but to kind of be in preparation for what it is that you're going to be doing, because I like for us to have a mindset of why we're coming and what the purpose is. So many people walk away from events, and it was just a feel-good moment. You know, I don't want it to be just a feel-good moment. I want anything that I do to be something that you've thought about before you get there so that you know what you want to execute and get that information while you're there. And when you walk out the door, you're literally ready to go.
Excellent. That makes a big difference, too. You know, because I've gone to events where, like, I walk through the door and I have no idea of what to expect and, you know, what the goals or the intentions of the workshop are. So that's good. I like that approach to it. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. And so I just want to give your contact information once again. So that's Kionnaf, KYONNAF Brown.com is the website. Kionnaf Brown is also on Facebook and on Instagram. I got to get a little bit more familiar with Instagram. I have an account. I just don't use it. But she's got two major events coming up. Live It, Do It, Be It. It's going to be an online event toward the end of February in 2020. You will go on Eventbrite to get your tickets. Live It, Do It, Be It on Eventbrite, February 2020. And then I believe you called it the Interchange for celebrating
yes,
her
ma'am.
40th birthday in July of next year. So we're going to be looking forward to doing that. And she's got some programs that are just incredible. The Uplift Women's Alliance is her premier organization where she speaks from. And then she has a Forgiveness Friday show. And Forgiveness Nation is a group that she has on Facebook. So those are the different ways that you can get in contact with Kionnaf, KYONNAF Brown. You have been just a delight. I mean, just such a powerful speaker and explaining your life path and how you got from where you were to where you are. And I appreciate you so much for sharing so freely of yourself and so openly and thoroughly. You've really been transparent with us tonight. So I thank you.
Amen.
And I wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa to everybody. Remember, the show on Thursday is at 2 o'clock. Now what? Where do I go from here? With Star Waters and Sandy Rogers, we talk about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. 2 o'clock Eastern time on Thursdays. I love you guys. May you have so much fun with family and friends as you end out this year and come into the next year. And we have an amazing 2-hour bi-coastal show next Tuesday, which is New Year's Eve. It will be Anthony A.K. King, the creator of Water of Life Symposium, all of our Water of Life members, and Simi Braxton from San Diego. So we'll see you guys Thursday and then next Tuesday. Have a great one. Love you.